Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm Nicholas Lorimer, your host, today joined by Terry Corrigan. Today we're going to be talking about the ANC's most recent National Executive Committee meeting. We're also going to be talking about the problems and the great crisis that seems to be maturing in Joburg. And lastly, we're going to be talking about weird, viral, fake news stuff involving the South African military. Okay, let's get started. So the ANC held a National Executive Committee meeting over the weekend, and rather than talking about, you know, what was said or what was leaked from that meeting into the media, let's just talk about the more interesting details that were reported in a sort of tabloidy Sunday World story. And I'm just going to sort of quote from this piece here in the Sunday World. The ANC's all-important NEC executive meeting this weekend was moved around different venues because it could not afford venues that were up to standard, with coffers drying up and Luthuli House staffers having been paid late twice this year. The ANC Treasurer General Gwen Ramakhopa's office could not afford to convene the meeting at the usual venue, Birchwood Conference Center and Hotel in Boksburg, east of Joburg. And as a result, they held at a different venue, which was not properly heated, which led to a lot of complaining by the ANC NEC members, including this incredible quote, which is not attributed to anyone in particular. So we don't know if it is a real quote, but it sounds very real. Quote, the source told the Sunday World, even the food was very bad. This cannot be the standard to treat NEC members of a liberation movement. The story goes on to relate how the ANC branded jackets, which usually don't sell that many because presumably most of the people attending this sort of function have those already, were going very quickly because it was so cold. And at a certain point when on the second day food did not arrive on time, the NEC members refused to go back to the meeting, complaining that they were too hungry to do so. And the backdrop of this all just seems to be that the ANC is once again in these huge financial troubles. So, Terrence, just your thoughts on the story in general, but also, you know, how much does this matter? Like, on first glance, you know, seeing the country's biggest party running out of cash like this seems to be a total disaster for them. But this happened just before the election. They managed to get some funding before the election came, and they had a not the greatest funded election campaign they've ever had, but they did have a significant election campaign. Is the ANC able to pull it out again this time?
Well, first of all, used to be said that it's very cold outside the ANC. It seems it's cold inside these days as well. The funding issue has been central to the problems facing South Africa's politics and governance since the 1990s. Almost every major scandal has had something to do in some way with party funding, specifically funding the ANC. You go back to the arms deal, etc., etc. So, yeah, this is in a sense the rotting tissue that binds together our political pathologies. I would say though that James Myburgh of Politics Web made an observation a few months ago, which I thought was very, very interesting, that fundraising for the ANC is often not done to the ANC as a party. It's also not what, and it's not, it's not what, it, it's not the only source of money that that it has. It's set up this these various trusts, which are not subject to things like the like party funding disclosures, and there's complete lack of any transparency there. I remember in the late 90s, the Treasurer General said that the net worth of the party was something over a billion rand. That's a lot of tom. Now maybe it's been run down, but I suspect that there are still financial reserves there that can be brought out for the good of the party and perhaps the comfort of its NEC. Or the salaries of its staff are not regarded as central. The other thing, of course, is that it does have a network of international supporters. And I personally find this the histrionics about about people not supporting the government's position and going overseas to be somewhat churlish, since the ANC has been conducting its own parallel foreign policy, sometimes jointly, by its cabinet ministers, even by its president, since the earliest days. President Mandela used to be quite open about this. He would go overseas as the South African head of state and solicit very large donations for his party. So there's a long history of this. Of course, world is a different place, and I suspect that there may be some who feel that investment is now, it's not yielding the kind of returns that might once have been expected of it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And of course, also, there's all these sort of wealthy figures who have been created through sort of governance patronage over the years. And while they may not necessarily pour that much money into the ANC, they always seem to be willing at some point to bail it out. And in fact, this particular Sunday World story ends with the situation essentially being rescued by a wealthy person on the committee who's hinted to be Ramaphosa, although they don't actually explicitly say who it was. They just say a comrade once again bailed out the thing and organized payment and made sure that the meeting ran smoothly. So, the party, regardless of whether it has, secret trusts or whatever, it does seem to also be able to guilt its high-ranking members into occasionally coughing up money to it. So, yeah, an interesting story to watch, though, because I must say that there was a time when, I think I did my first campaigning in an election in like 2009 or something. And in that election, the ANC had presence everywhere, even in places that it wasn't strong. It had front of house operations, and it had people staffing those, and it had just it ran dysfunctionally, but it was everywhere.
Sure.
And I'm not as in the political game as I used to be, but the impression I get is that that is not really the case anymore. It's much thinner on the ground. So the organizational weakening does seem to be a real thing that has been happening, and I think that's happened in 2024 to some degree. I don't know if you have thoughts on that.
Yeah, I've noticed the same thing. One hears these anecdotes, and I can vouch for one or two of them, but the electoral observers, where the DA people like feel sorry for the lone ANC guy who's sitting in the sun and go like, "Oh, so, do you want to come sit with us? Because you've been baking, you haven't had anything to eat or drink," which I think is quite sweet stories. But yeah, I think what you're seeing there is essentially the fact that the ANC has never been a particularly well managed organization, and it's never properly, got its institutions working working well. I remember going to its headquarters in the 1990s, and a lot of it just seemed to be very chaotic. Now, of course, this is impressionistic, but things like there didn't seem to be a firm system for storing excess furniture, for instance. And I think that's kind of catching up with him.
Yes.
The country isn't doing as well. Businesses that might have been willing to kiss a bit of rear aren't willing to do that anymore. Rand doesn't go as far. People are just poorer. So yeah, look, I think that long term, the big story here is really that the ANC is in a sense unraveling.
Yes.
It may, I'm not predicting its imminent demise, but becoming less and less able to sort of manage itself, and that might well unfold before its control over the state is complete.
Yes.
Is such in its grasp.
I mean, this particular NEC meeting that they held in the unheated venue, they postponed several times. In fact, it was a major struggle to even hold this meeting. And one wonders, I suspect that may have been deliberate to prevent sort of hot, heated infighting over the GNU, but it does not speak to a well-run organization.
No.
Okay, let us run on to our next story. Speaking of things not being run very well, the National Treasury has issued a warning to Johannesburg, saying the municipality must, quote, fix persistent, fruitless, wasteful expenditure or face a funding freeze. Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana has said that Treasury will withhold national funding for the city of Johannesburg if there is no little to no action taken by the municipality to address the unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, or wasteful expenditure. He gave them the city 14 days to comply with this. The story came out over the weekend. The city of Joburg spent around 1.4 billion rand in the 2023-2024 financial year, 1.4 billion rand in unauthorized expenditure, 1.5 billion in irregular expenditure, and 17 million in fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So I'm not in a sort of, accounting master, so forgive me if I'm slightly inaccurate on this, but unauthorized is expenditure that hasn't been properly allowed. Irregular is expenditure that contravenes some piece of legislation, and fruitless and wasteful is, of course, just obvious wasted money. Total irregular expenditure, which is rolled over from the previous year because it needs to be either recovered or wiped away by Treasury, now sits at 22 billion rand. So the city's finances, shall we say, are not in a great state. At the very same time, Gauteng Premier Panyabzala Sufi has said that he believes the city of Joburg will be ready to host international guests at the G20 summit in November. There is much talk of a rush to fix dysfunctional traffic lights, potholes, make sure sewage isn't flowing in the streets. Lesufi, however, said that, well, the efforts to restore the city were not merely for the G20 summit. Okay, well, that's nice to know that the citizens of the country will benefit as well, that they're also thinking of us when they're trying to fix the city for financial for foreign guests. But anyway, so Terence, I think I said towards the beginning of the year that one of the big stories of this year is going to be the growing crisis in the municipality and city of Johannesburg. And I think it is now coming to pass. I doubt that Treasury will actually cut off payments at this stage. It's just too big of a political headache for them to do that. But this is a sign that the situation in the city's management is growing desperate. What's your take on the story?
Well, if they want to fix things up, they can fix the water pipe that hasn't been working today and that has left my household and our neighborhood without water. Or the billing system that we've discussed previously.
Which my Joburg residing parents have recently also been hit by a huge bill from. So it's a very common problem.
What is there to say? No, I don't think that at the end of the day, any money is going to be cut off. I remember there was a big story in the 70s with New York City going to President then Gerald Ford and asking for a bailout because they were in straits. And very well remembered a headline in a New York paper, "Ford to City Drop Dead." The point is that ultimately they relented, and well, there wasn't much consequence management. I think that's really what it gets down to. If you read that article, they talk about the need for consequence management. But I think because local governments in particular are very hooked into the patronage system, and because they've developed a inadequate work culture, very little happens. So yeah, look, I think it's great that we get to tot up parts of the city for dignitaries. Be nice if they could do their jobs though. I'm not really holding my breath.
Yeah, no, you see, this seems to be the problem is that even that there was this time when government focused on getting things kind of clean and shiny, that it could at least sort of temporarily do it, right? And I think of the 2010 World Cup, Soccer World Cup, where despite many of the problems in the country and the already growing problems of corruption and such in the ANC, back in that period, the ANC managed to pull off and the government ran a pretty successful, I thought, World Cup. I was in high school at the time, and I enjoyed the month off school, so maybe that biased me, but that was my impression of it. That was relatively well run, but I don't think it would be capable of doing the same thing today. I do think that the institutional rot is much greater, and even when government is actually trying, it's struggling to fix the problem, and that's because it hasn't. The rot is set in so bad, and the culture of accountability is collapsed so much that they don't have any levers left to pull. There needs to be sort of fundamental change to how the system is actually run in order to turn things around. You can't just sort of throw money at the problem and
Or
get everything looking good for a month or two.
you need to actually promote the people who are trying to do their jobs and fire the people who aren't.
Right, exactly. And we've had another, 10 years, 15 years of not doing that, which has degraded the public service. Okay, let's move on to our last story. This is a weird one. Over the last week, there was a video that went sort of kind of a little bit viral, of someone dressed in some kind of military uniform claiming to be a commander of the South African National Defence Force, who called for a march on the union buildings. He said that South Africans must march on the union buildings to demand that the government step aside. In this 14-minute video, the man says, "Let's go to the union buildings and raise our concerns to the government that we are enough. We cannot be a nation that is suffering forever. Let's go to the union buildings. The ball is in our court, commanders." He said that the nation's land should belong to the king and called for the removal of all politicians and the ushering in of a new government run by the revolutionary forces who would report to the king's council. It's not entirely clear which king he meant, but I presume the Zulu king, that being the most important king in the
Yeah,
country,
I
or
was
at least the
telling the
most
other
widely
part
known.
about that one.
SANDF responded saying the video was completely fake, misleading, that this person's not even wearing a SANDF uniform, that he doesn't appear to be a member, a commander, or actually have any association with the SANDF. But, Terence, this makes me think of there does seem to be this kind of constant attempt from sort of people with a kind of MK type outlook on the country's politics, shall I say, to incite something like the July riots again. All the time, there's always these messages that sort of seem to go viral about some sort of national shutdown or some sort of call for huge protest or overthrowing the government. None of them ever go anywhere, but it really does seem like someone out there is kind of trying their luck. I don't know. What do you make of this? It seems quite odd.
Yeah, look, I think that until one knows exactly where it comes from, everything is kind of speculatory. What I would say is that this is an example of what's called the liar's dividend, where there is so much rot in the information environment that something like this can take hold. Now, it seems this was a very amateurish job, the guy's not wearing a proper uniform and whatever, but maybe the idea is just to stir up animosity. Maybe you don't need 100,000 people singing "Hail to the King" marching on the Union buildings. But if you can get 100 people to pitch up, block traffic for a bit, maybe that's almost just as well. Until
Right,
people
and you
just
hope that it sparks something bigger.
people just don't know what to believe. I don't know, but scary days.
But I would urge everyone who sees videos like this to be very skeptical. Also, I have a feeling that placing the country under the command of a king's council through the intermediary of quote revolutionary forces would not be a way to improve the lives of most South Africans, I strongly suspect anyway. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found this show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.